This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Booksplode, Black Sad, They All Fall Down, Part 1. Welcome to iFanboy Booksplode, Black Sad, They All Fall Down, Part 1. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and my Josh Flanagan.
I don't even know what you're laughing about.
I almost dropped the book. I was holding it, and I was spinning it to the back to look at it, and I didn't have a firm grip on it, and it was almost being a clatter.
Is it over your damaged foot?
Yeah, I was going to drop it on my toe. We're here to talk about Black Sad, They All Fall Down, Part 1. This is our Booksplode show. It was unlocked with the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. So what they unlocked was... Every month we do either a Booksplode, which is this show, we talk about a collected edition, or a Talksplode interview show. We don't know. It's always an exciting surprise to find out which one it'll be. But from now on, it's one or the other.
So this book, let me go backwards a little bit.
Yep.
Black Sad is a much beloved, it's Spanish, I believe.
Yes.
Yes, okay. Dark Horse has been publishing...
Well, I mean, it's the creators, Juan Diaz Canales and Juanjo Guarnido are Spanish. The publisher is French in Europe.
Okay, but it's translated.
Published here and translated by Dark Horse in America.
Right, into English. Okay.
Yes.
So this has been around a while, and when I looked at the creators in the back, I was like, oh, they started this when they were young.
Yes.
Much beloved by whatever the audience of people, like, I don't know, maybe there's a million people who read this in Europe because they have a different set there. I think I have one volume before, and I am super impressed by it, and when I open it, I really like it. But it isn't like... my favorite thing. I want to say, like, oh my God, I love it so much, but it doesn't, for whatever reason. But the same thing happened now that happened last time is that as soon as I started reading it, I was like, wow, like the experience of it is really special. I'm not necessarily like going to run around and tell everybody, oh my God, it's the best thing, it's my favorite. But it was the same feeling as last time where I went, oh my God, how do they make comics like this?
Yeah. So before we get into that, so just a little bit more in the history. So this is the... Yeah. Fourth Dark Horse collection, but it's the sixth volume of Black Sad. So the first Dark Horse collection, it's a really thick hardcover, and it hit America by storm when it came out. It was, you know, everyone was talking about it. That includes the first three volumes that came out through the French publisher. Then there was The Silent Hell, which is the second volume by Dark Horse, which is the fourth volume. I missed Amarillo, which is the next volume after that, so I need to go back and get that one because I really do.
I think
like
I only have the first one,
And then this is the fourth one, which is only part one. So we're not getting the whole take. But let's dive into it. So, Black Sad is the story of John Black Sad. He is a cat. Is it anthropomorphic? Is that the proper word for animals?
Yes. Yeah, they walk around on 2 feet. They speak to each other in the same language.
It's like Disney.
Well, that's a whole part of the discussion we will have. But it's interesting in this story, and I got to tell you, other than the very basic details, I do not remember the last one I read.
That's okay. It was a long time ago. It was like 12 years ago.
In this book, which takes place in New York City, Yes, in the late 50s, early 60s. All the animals seem to be representative of ethnic groups.
Kind of, yeah.
Which, well, they'll be like, oh, you're a cat. You know, like, they're treated that way. However, there are many, many more different animal species than there are ethnic groups.
Right, that's what I mean.
And so the metaphor works, but it falls apart if you poke at it too much. But I like it. It works really well. But that's kind of how it is. It's this melting pot of a city, and, you know, and, like, you don't trust the weasels. So, poor weasels always get to be the criminals.
John Blacksad is a private investigator. It's basically a noir detective story set in a sort of a Disney-fied, but that's really reductive, but in a way that animals are walking around wearing clothes and driving cars. And
Disney-fied only in the sense of the visual.
Yes.
That reminds you of classic 2D line drawing animation. Like, think of the Sword in the Stone, you know, how those animals were animated and moved. That's what I always think of, like the squirrels. Yeah, Jungle Book, something like that. I mean, I think it's safe to say that we haven't seen that kind of animation in a long time.
No, it's all Pixar now.
It really brings me back to a really earlier point in life. But also, the whole time I was reading this, I just kept thinking, this is amazing. More people should think of the Weekly, the Otter guy, like, he looks like a Disney character from that era. And the way that his mouth moves and his face, Blacksad does this to a certain extent too, is that they're able to imprint those human faces on what look like anatomically correct animal faces. And I love that. Yeah. It's amazing.
You and I both were gifted this for Christmas from our third colleague, Ron Richards. And I read it before you, and I got to a certain point in the story, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
Josh needs to read this quickly. And that's, I kept pushing it for Books Club without telling you why, because I didn't want to spoil it for you.
Yeah, you didn't.
But this story is basically, why don't you tell them why I wanted you to read it?
All right, so we open with Shakespeare in the Park, and I got to say, that first page where the animals are performing Shakespeare, I was like, what the fuck am I getting into here? There's Shakespeare in the Park, and then all of a sudden a bunch of cops show up in the park, and they kick them out, and you've done something wrong, and I'm like, that's weird. It also sounds familiar. What is that? And we find out that the park, of course, New York City historically, was part of the domain of Robert Moses, the eminent, the builder, as he is, the master builder. And by page 16, we see a man, an eagle or a hawk, in a suit standing atop the Whitestone Bridge under construction. And it's Robert Moses, if he was a bird man. This story isn't just, okay, very, very briefly, Robert Moses was in a titanic figure in the history of New York City and the East Coast and kind of buildings and transportation in general.
He reshaped the face of the city and of cities in general, sort of.
It's more than I could explain to you, and it's bigger than you could possibly imagine.
Read The Power Broker.
The Power Broker by
Robert
Caro, which, by the way, is a fantastic book, and you should read it. So knowing that, having read The Power Broker, having been quite aware, like, they did Robert Moses better than Ed Norton did in his movie. I mean, like, straight up. You know, these are all things that happened other than, I mean, like, the conceits of the book, the plot, but the overarching, like, the things he was working on and building and the way that he talked about, like, they researched Robert Moses and they wrote him into a character here, and I was quite surprised.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole scene here where they're all in Washington Square Park, which is a park he wanted to destroy to build a highway, and, and you know, I was like, wow. I mean, these two guys from Spain are really going deep into New York City history. But beyond that, I'm looking at every page, and every page of this book is a marvel of art. Storytelling, character work, the detail is unparalleled. We don't talk a ton about European comics here. We do sometimes. We did last year with that book's name. I can't remember at the moment. Juanjo Gardino, who's the illustrator, is just terrific. Absolutely terrific.
And when we say European comics, you know, it's important. If you are an American, I mean, I don't know who I'm talking to. I assume they're more advanced readers, but it's not like this is crazy. It's not like you don't recognize it as comics, but there are a couple of little things. Because I think they're printed larger, there's more per page, like the there's more panels, there's just more space that they work within. You know, the word balloons look a little different. But for me, the art, the line drawing, whatever, but the finishing, the coloring on it is just magnificent. It's perfect. Like, it's one of those things, like, when I look at it, I was like, I can't think of a single thing that you could change about this. In terms of what it looks like. You know, we will talk about, you know, a book and we're like, the coloring doesn't fit right for it, or the pacing, or what. You're like, this just, you just live in it. You just move through it. And that is the best thing you can say about comic book storytelling.
It's not glossy. It seems like a lot of watercolor work. And,
yeah.
but not in a way that makes it impressionistic. It very much feels like a world you're looking at, but it has a texture to it that a lot of, you know, American comic colors don't have, just because it's a different style of coloring.
It looks like it's analog coloring. I'm sure it's not, but it does look like it.
It's important to note, if you're listening to this, you don't have to have read the other previous volumes of Black Sad to read this. It's like any, you know, movie series. You don't have to have watched all the Thin Man movies to watch any random Thin Man movie. It's a detective in New York when there's a crime. And it really, there's, you know, the last page panel, which is the cliffhanger, does recall a previous story, but I didn't remember that. I just read it in the notes at the end, and it's fine.
Nor do you need to know a lot about Robert Moses or anything. That should be noted. I don't want to set that up at the beginning. No. Make sure to read the 1,200-page book.
But it helps.
It does. It makes you appreciate it in a certain different way.
I couldn't believe it. I think I put the book down from laughing when I turned that page and realized what was going on.
I could tell from the suit. One of the things I thought was really good is that he's talking to the press in a certain way, and that was the thing that Robert Moses would do. You can see the press conferences on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And there's just an arrogance and a sureness to him. The only thing is that, you know, this guy in this is, you know, involved in a crime because we're trying to solve a murder and we're trying to find out what goes behind it. That is more specious in terms of what Robert Moses was actually doing.
As far as you know.
Well, I'm saying as far as anybody can prove. It's not, no, very, very soon, like, there's lots of things that are kind of suspicious or whatever, but he worked largely within legal channels to do things that were illegal, doesn't even, like, extra legal. Like, he covered himself in every possible way. So sometimes you can start looking at, like, well, was he dealing with shady characters? Was he having people killed? Like, I don't tend to think of him as that. But in this story, it makes sense. And some people have. If you, again, what was the name of that Ed Norton movie? Brooklyn something or other. And that, like, that painted him as this kind of villain. That was actually very similar to sort of him being involved in shady shit to get his way. But it was more like he was a bulldozer.
Motherless Brooklyn, which is based on a book.
Right. Yeah.
And also, there's lots of things here. So one of them is that Black Sad has a buddy who is a reporter. And what's his name? He's got a
Weekly.
Weekly. And he's got a crush on one of the actresses in the play. And turns out she's sort of like a new journalist. He's a old school flat cap wearing, you know, newspaper journalist, and she's part of the new breed of journalists, and he gets her job at his paper. They're running around chasing on the story, and she's, you know, she's getting sexually harassed by almost every person that they come in contact with. So there's a bit of that there, not in a salacious way, in a terrible way, you know, and like, this is not good.
The other thing is that Weekly, basically, she's shadowing him, and Weekly gets an audience with, you figure out his name, but because I don't want to keep saying Robert Moses, but he gets an interview with him, and basically he's like, all right, I'm going to follow you around for a while. We'll do a profile. And it's very fawning. It's very gloating. And she's behind him, like, you know how much stuff that what he's doing is bad? And there's a little conflict, like a little sort of minor part of the story is this conflict between old-timey journalism, or at least the concept of it, and sort of newer investigative journalism.
His name is Solomon.
Solomon, that's right. Which Moses, that makes sense.
Yes.
I thought that was really good. Speaking of the little sexual harassment bit, there's a party in here, and I think it's a fundraiser or something like that, and there's all these, like, I don't know, they look like Playboy bunnies, like the ones from the clubs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And we see them out for like two or three pages. They're out on the floor and they're holding the drinks and they're part of the show or whatever. And then we cut to them. The one female character goes into the bathroom and the three of them are there in the background talking about how tired they are of being treated the way that they are out there. And it was not even a main point, but that scene really stuck with me. Like the transformation.
Yeah, it was crazy because you see the prototypical, like, the Playboy Bunny Club girls. They are, you know, sitting on people's laps and bringing drinks around and, you know, dancing. And then you cut to the reality of the background where they're just like, if one more pig puts his hand on me, he's going to get a tray in the head. And they're all like, they look more haggard than they did on this floor and they're smoking. And
but they've got no choice but to take it if they need the job that they have. And it was just this little human, air quote, moment that it really stuck out to me.
I think what's great about this book is that there's a never-ending well of things to explore here, you know. There's crime, there's the civic element, there's society, and we said earlier, like, there's clearly a stratus of, a class stratus, depending on what animal you are. And it's not quite as delineated as race, you know, currently, because you said there's way too many animals, but
race,
you know, some animals are looked down on here.
Economics and, you know, yeah. And then what you think, the cute fuzzy animals are sort of near the top, or the hunter, you know, animals are, you know, apex predators, things
right,
like that.
I'm looking at a page where he's dealing with the mole people, who the moles who are working underground to build the subway tunnels. And he's like, they call this the burrow. And the guy's like, that's a slur against moles. And, you know, so like there's that part of it.
It would be really difficult to live in a society with hundreds of species and not say the wrong thing. It would be very difficult. I'm just going to ping backwards really quickly on that mm-hmm. thing with the bathroom. What's mm-hmm. interesting is that the other character, the female character whose name I don't remember, she does not interact with them. She doesn't talk with them. That whole scene takes place in the background in a few panels.
Right. They're just overhearing it. Yeah.
And she doesn't react to it. She's just there. But you can tell she's going through the same thing. Really nice sort of subtle storytelling and cartooning.
She's Rachel Zuko.
Rachel Zuko. Isn't she the mayor of Bloodhaven?
Maybe. I did think that when I read it, actually. It's the same last name. You know, it's funny, for two guys who I assume live in Europe, this is full of little New York details that I don't know how you get that.
I mean, you could watch a lot of movies about New York, but it's not the same thing as walking around and sort of seeing that. I mean, maybe they, you know, spent time there.
People of the world. And it's also historical details, like all the guys in the Iron Lungs and the Bellevue Ward. And
right.
The way that this city was built post-war with the rapid expansion and all the things, you know, the subway lines and the new buildings and the new civic structures, the things that were destroyed in order to get those things. The upside and the downside to progress is a lot of what's going on here.
Shakespeare in the Park was a really big deal when it started, and it was a problem. And that's like this little tiny part of the story that's in there.
Which is funny, because it's this little theater in Central Park. It's not even a big thing.
Yeah, it was a thing that no one cares about anymore.
No, that's not true. It's always sold out.
Yeah, I guess the idea was to bring culture to the masses in a way. And, you know, I don't think it's the masses going anymore.
No. I mean, you can go. It's just hard to.
Sure, exactly. And when that happens, who gets them? You know what? I will say, if I have a criticism, I don't know if I fully digested the relationship between the, I guess, the hitman, mm-hmm. the seagull, and what was going on there. His wife or child, I don't remember, was in Bellevue in one of the Iron Lungs, big yes. room full of Iron Lungs. And basically, Solomon is making him do things. I'm checking this with you, and you tell me where I fall apart.
Yeah.
And the blackmail here is that the air goes, like he said, you don't do it and the air goes off, meaning that the Iron Lung will be shut off and whoever it is will die. And that's why this guy's doing it.
It sounds like that Solomon's paying for the Iron Lung.
Okay.
Iron Lung was a thing that I believe was it tuberculosis or was it just inner lung disease?
Some other thing. Polio. Wasn't it late stage polio?
And they put you in these giant tubes that you lived in. You were laying down on your back and only really your head was sticking out. And
yeah, it's polio.
And you couldn't survive without it. And so it's horrible in so many ways. But so this guy, the seagulls, kid or wife is being paid for by Solomon. So Solomon's got his own personal hitman who takes care of any problems that come up in the way of his projects. So inspectors who aren't on his side or politicians, this guy takes care of them some way or another.
He had files on everybody.
You can't Moses. Trust birds, Josh.
No, but also when the weasels show up, you knew exactly what they sounded like. And you're like, Roger Rabbit got this right.
True.
Exactly. There's a turkey. Is the turkey the mayor?
I'm looking at the turkey right now, page 34 or 38, depending on what number you're looking at.
Turkeys are so disturbing.
But you can picture that person, right? With sort of the
yes.
turkey gullet neck, you know, like an old, you mm-hmm. know, old politician. That's what's so great about the art, is that you can see the people behind the animals. You can totally see who they are.
It really shows you how far you can take a metaphor that was initially a childish thing. In mm-hmm. kids' books, they would take an animal and that animal would represent a kind of person, and that's how you teach a lesson, theoretically.
Yeah.
And this is like saying, well, what if you apply very mature storytelling and just excellent art, like top-notch storytelling art, and see if you can carry that out and have it not be silly and have it not be a gag. I mean, it's, you know, speaking of Roger Rabbit, like you can see where there's gags. There's a couple of those gags in here. They honk the monkey's nose at one point. You know, but for the most part, the animal part kind of disappears. It helps you see them as people. It basically locks our stereotypes in through a nicer way. But for the most part, like, it's a real world that you are in. It's all animals in suits and shit, but it doesn't feel like a kid's book.
Right, but then you have things like on page 50 or 46, because there's the Dark Horse page, and there's a handwritten page. Solomon's driver bodyguard is a dog, and he sniffs out Weekly, who is not even anywhere near them. You know, so there are things like where they do have their animal abilities in some ways.
Yeah,
That monkey bartender did not want him to be at that bar on page 40.
I mean, the painting is the one of the, you know, the painting with the bar outside.
Mm-hmm.
Were they looking at the painting?
Yeah, the painting's behind the monkey. Look on the wall.
Oh, okay. Okay. Do you know what that's called? What's that painting called?
It was a nice play on that gag, because that gag is used all the time in comics, yes, where that famous painting, which you and I can't remember at the moment.
You see through a big picture window, people around like a bar inside. It's nighttime. It's lit inside. There's people at the counter. It's a very famous...
It's a Hopper painting. It's Nighthawks.
There you go. Yes.
So the joke is often that their characters are in that painting, but here we see the painting as an establishing shot because they're going for a drink, and then we pull back and see it's actually a reproduction on the wall of the bar.
It's not in the style of the other panels, so something's off. Okay, I see it now.
So I was happy to get this because, like I said, I'd fallen off. I want to go back and get the third volume. So I think it's just such a feat of storytelling and ingenuity. The art's wonderful. The writing is really, really strong. I mean, like I said, there's so many little touches about New York City and New York City history. And
whoever's doing translation has done a really good job with naturalistic dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't sound like it's been translated poorly. Yeah.
That's what she says in the back.
It says there's a whole thing on notes on translation. But the point being, I think that just that, you know, sometimes there's bits of it that don't, but like if you didn't know it was a foreign comic, I don't think you'd know it was a foreign comic. This is my point. It's very well done.
It's written in Spanish. The French publisher translates the Spanish into French.
What must they think of this? Do they know who Robert Moses is?
And then Diana Schultz, the editor, she speaks Spanish and French, and she's, you know, American. Oh,
she's amazing.
It's interesting because she says it's not just like a straight translation, because languages are different. You know, when you translate French or whatever into English, it's not exactly the way we talk.
No.
So you have to take that and then translate it even further to make it, you know, sound the way it's, you know, she says it in the back. Spanish has fewer words than French. And so when you translate it, sometimes you have to add words, or you have to, you know, the word balloons don't exactly fit. Like, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting whole other idea of comics that we don't think about as translations.
Diana Schutz. Noel Schutz.
Yeah, Schutz.
She's a legend. That's crazy.
These are great books. These are really great books. This is a thinner volume than the other ones.
Yeah, I read it in very little amount of time, but I mean, at the end, I was like, I want more, because it is a cliffhanger at the end.
They haven't announced when the next one's coming out yet.
Yeah. They got to translate it. It's just like, it's a bit, it looks like a big, if you were the format, it's like a big kid's picture book. It's about 50-something pages, you know, but in terms of production, it's a beautiful book, but also just the quality of art and storytelling in it is worth the price.
Yeah, so if you've never actually read a Black Sad book, you can pick up any volume. I'm looking at the original one right now. I have them all sitting here. You know, just as beautiful back then. Back then, like it was in the 40s. Yeah. It was like 10 years ago. Any of these volumes work. It's just a detective story, self-contained for the most part. So I would recommend the latest one. It's smaller. It gives you a nice taste of it. If you like it, you can go back and you can get the bigger, thicker, meatier volumes.
Yep.
Stan Lee says it's as good as it gets on the front cover.
Wow. Pull quote. Stan Lee's pull quotes are kind of interchangeable, but he's not wrong in this instance.
The first volume has an introduction by Jim Steranko. But yeah, so check it out. Published in America by Dark Horse Comics. Black Sad, They All Fall Down Part 1. It's about 60 pages. It came out recently, you know, last year. It's very good. These are all very good books. It's a nice tonic, you know,
yes,
from the weekly comics. It's a comic. It's the same kind of comic you can read, but it's a different kind of storytelling.
You know, weekly comics are weekly comics, no matter how finely crafted and honed they are and how much time they got to get out the door.
Right.
And this is just that. They have a little more time to think about it, put stuff into it. I'm sure they have deadlines, but it is labored over. It is lovingly crafted. It's a little more artisanal, I guess.
Yes, it's bespoke.
Yes. No. They didn't make it just for you.
I thought they might have.
Oh, I'm the main character.
I mean, kind of. It's a PI detective story, and it's Robert Moses is the bad guy. I mean, that's...
You're not wrong. It
was pretty funny.
But if it was bespoke, you would have the only copy.
That's true. It's very valuable. Should find out from Ron if he even knew that the Robert Moses angle was a thing, because we all three of us enjoy Robert Moses stories. Didn't we do a Robert Moses book?
Yeah, the book, The Builder, I think. It's over there. I can't get to it without running away from this mic and losing my headphones. But
was that a Booksplode?
It was. I think it may have been the last Booksplode we did.
All three of us?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Let me look it up in our list of Booksplodes here. I don't know if it was a Booksplode. It might have been something else. Yeah. I don't see it on the list here. What did we do that for? That's weird.
I don't know. I went to the shelf to look. We definitely all talked about it.
I know that, but that's strange. This is riveting. I know.
Book of the year?
I'm looking it up because I know we did it.
I don't know if it's called The Builder. I may have got the title wrong. Something like that.
This is just not showing up anywhere. We talked about this book.
Wasn't that also a French book?
Yeah, it was. They must love him there. Well, it's not on the books build list, but there was a French graphic novel about Robert Moses called Robert Moses, the Master Builder of New York.
And if there's a link to be found, we'll put that in the show notes.
I don't know. One. We definitely talked about it.
Yeah.
Where?
We didn't just do it on our own and record it.
That's so strange. Was it just us to ourselves?
Well, sometimes we make just private podcasts.
And never release them.
Yeah, that's not true.
Weird.
It's all grist for the mill.
Well, anyway, as I said, next month it'll be either another Booksplode or a Talksplode. It's just how it's going to go going forward. It'll be most likely mostly Booksplodes. We have a couple of fun ones on the hopper. Mm-hmm. I don't want to announce them yet until we're ready to go, because this is actually supposed to be a different book we're going to talk about, but we didn't end up finishing it in time. But we'll be back. As soon as we know what it is, we'll talk about it on the regular show, which is our Pick of the Week show, where Josh and I, sometimes special guests, talk about the week's comics. It's at ifanboy.com. We have that show. We have our Mediasplode monthly show that the patrons also unlocked, again, at patreon.com/ifanboy. Consider being a patron today. And that was fun. I enjoyed reading that, and I enjoyed talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish it was longer. And I never say that.
That's true. So we'll be back next time, next month, with another Booksplode or Talksplode. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I don't bother chasing mice around. I sneak down the alley looking for a fight. Howling to the moonlight on summer night. Save the blues while the lady cats cry. Wow, stray cat, you're a real dog guy. I wish I could be as carefree and wild. But I got cat class and I got cat style.